The Claire Byrne Show on News Talk
with Aviva Insurance.
Petrol bombs and bricks thrown at police on the outskirts of Belfast overnight as violence in Northern Ireland continued for a second night. Our chief reporter Barry White joins us now from Belfast. Barry, where was the worst of this unrest overnight?
Hi Claire, good morning. The most serious disorder was in Glengormley last night. That's around 15 kilometres northwest of Belfast city centre. Like you say, police came under a sustained attack for several hours as bricks, bottles, paving slabs and petrol bombs were hurled at officers. The trouble began at Sandy Nose roundabout, where up to 200 protesters in balaclavas, masks and face coverings marched towards the nearby Chimney Corner Hotel. Now, this hotel is currently housing around 100 asylum seekers. And the hotel, Claire, was just one of a number of addresses on a so-called hit list that was circulated online yesterday of target locations linked to immigrants. Now, riot police and armoured Land Rovers prevented the crowd from reaching the hotel, pushing protesters back towards Glengormley, where violence quickly escalated. At one stage, a van was set on fire and pushed towards police lines, while a nearby derelict property was also torched. When I was there, I saw dozens of men dressed in black, many with their faces covered, wearing balaclavas. They were ripping bricks from walls and smashing paving stones with sledgehammers to create missiles to throw at the police. The PSNI then eventually deployed its water cannons. There was two water cannons they used to try and disperse the crowd. And the disorder didn't fully subside until after midnight. Now this morning, the PSNI have confirmed that 12 officers were injured and up to 16 people were arrested. And speaking earlier this morning, the Northern Ireland Secretary of State, Hilary Benn, said a small group of thugs are behind this violence.
And I just want to convey to you the sense of fear that has spread amongst ethnic minority people in Northern Ireland because they saw the scenes that you and others reported on their screens. And they've also heard about, for example, people being stopped in their cars on the way to work to be asked what their nationality is. And this is not what Northern Ireland is about. This is not the true Northern Ireland. It's a wonderful place full of warm-hearted people. We're talking about a very small number of thugs engaged in this kind of activity. And the eyes of the world are on Northern Ireland. And that is why this must stop. And I know that the police are, of course, very keen to identify and arrest those who've been involved in the violence. And I know from my conversations with the chief constable that he will be very keen. He is very keen to pursue identifying those involved, because when people realise they will be brought to account for what they have done, then it may cause others to think twice about engaging in this sort of activity.
That's the Northern Ireland Secretary of State, Hilary Benn. So, Barry, was there unrest elsewhere across Northern Ireland last night?
Yeah, Claire, there was. There were smaller pockets of disorder. Crowds gathered in Coleraine where police blocked roads. There were minor disturbances in parts of Derry. In Portadown, I've seen a video circulating on social media that appears to show a teenager almost setting himself on fire while he throws a petrol bomb at a police barricade. Well, there was also a small protest near Stormont last night, although when I was there at that was, as I say, small and it remained peaceful.
Barry, what about Belfast city centre? Like those areas we saw yesterday where the homes and vehicles were burned on Tuesday night, extraordinary scenes. Did those areas remain calm?
Yeah, they did. Those flashpoints from Tuesday night remain calm, Claire. East Belfast was largely quiet. A small crowd of around 20 people gathered near the site where that glider bus was burnt out on Tuesday night. I'm sure lots of people have seen videos and pictures of it online. So there was about 20 people gathered there at that area last night in East Belfast, but it remains relatively peaceful. I was there for a while and there was no significant incidents there. Police maintained a heavy presence across East Belfast as well last night, with checkpoints operating from yesterday afternoon. Meanwhile, Belfast city centre was effectively deserted by early evening. Many businesses closed their doors early, while public transport services were suspended from 5 o'clock yesterday evening. There had been speculation about a protest at City Hall at 7 p.m, but that never materialised. I actually walked from my hotel to City Hall. It's about a 10-minute walk, and the only people I encountered were confused tourists wondering why restaurants, pubs and shops had shut early, or police, because there was such a high police presence in the city centre. And the city centre was essentially in a lockdown from 5 o'clock yesterday evening as a precaution.
Now, all of this happened despite the appeal for calm from the family of Stephen Ogilvy, and Stephen was seriously injured in that knife attack in Belfast on Monday night. What have they been saying?
Yeah, Mr. Ogilvy's family, Claire, urged people to stop sharing what they described as false information about the attack and said they were disgusted by the disorder that followed. In a statement, they said they did not want the tragedy used to divide communities or fuel hostility. They also highlighted the positive contribution migrants make to society, including with healthcare and hospitality. Now, the Ogilvy family released this statement yesterday evening, so it didn't make any difference last night to that violence that we've seen in Glengormley. And I suppose, Claire, now the fear for the PSNI is that last night's violence was more localised, and when it becomes more sporadic like that, it's a lot harder to police. And I suppose the fear is now going into the weekend that there will be more sporadic protests in different areas outside Belfast.
All right, that's Newstalk's chief reporter Barry White. I'm also joined by Dr. Peter Walsh, who's senior researcher and expert on asylum and border issues at the Migration Observatory. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Thank you for joining us this morning. The London Times is really focusing today on asylum seekers travelling to the UK over the border on the island of Ireland. And they have highlighted this TikTok ad, Peter, where people smugglers are offering guaranteed access to the UK via Dublin. It's extraordinary because the video is made in Dublin Airport and it tells you how much it will cost and a guaranteed success rate. Are you aware that that border route is being used now as we see controls increased on the channel crossings, on the small boats?
Oh, well, it's long been known by smugglers and amongst migrants that that has been for a long time a porous border. It's an open land border. There are no systematic checks. And remember that keeping that border open was a long-standing priority for both sides, for the UK and Ireland. There was a desire from both sides not to see a closed border with checkpoints that you couldn't easily cross through. And that's been long known by the smugglers. I'm not surprised to see ads of this kind. We see smugglers deploying similar social media messaging in northern France, targeting migrants there. So it's not a surprise to see that. And really, this is something of an open secret. It's long been known that if only an individual can get to Ireland, then in all likelihood, they'll be able to cross the border and therefore claim asylum in the UK.
There's certainly a heightened awareness of it now, though, and, you know, pressure on the Home Office to look in the UK, to look at how it might be solved. But people have huge issues with additional checks on the border. So what should happen?
Yeah, well, that's a political question. I think the key thing for the UK government is that it runs both ways. I mean, for sure, a bilateral arrangement can be made to return asylum claimants back to Ireland. But it's also the case that substantial numbers go from Northern Ireland to Ireland. And that's why the UK government said in 2024, when numbers really flared up, it had no interest in returning people to Ireland, because then it would have to accept people from Ireland and it could possibly have ended up receiving more people overall. So it'll be interesting to see how recent events change this calculus and change the view on both sides.
And then looking at it from the Republic's side, there was a decision really to resign from that arrangement to return asylum seekers to the UK when the UK-Rwanda plan was in the ether back a couple of years ago. So the arrangement hasn't really worked, or certainly hasn't been used much, has it, Peter?
No, it hasn't. And I think it's because, you know, really there wasn't all that much operational appetite on both sides, despite public appearances. For that reason, now there's renewed scrutiny on this. And so the big question is, will governments agree a bilateral arrangement that will introduce checks on the border? I should say, by the way, you know, traditionally, no systematic checks. Occasionally, Ireland would conduct a few spot checks south of the border on buses, but nothing like the kind of systematic border checking that you would expect ordinarily on connecting territories.
And there would be huge cost associated to that as well, right? You'd have to put in massive investment in terms of staff and logistics in order to carry out those regular checks.
Yes, absolutely. It would mean closing down roads. It would mean border checkpoints. Staff costs would be enormous. The infrastructural startup costs would be substantial. But you could imagine it would be within the gift of government. And it's not unusual to have large stretches of land border policed and securitized in this way. And we're not dealing with the US-Mexico border here, but nevertheless, still a substantial undertaking. And it would require substantial investment, I would suggest, from both sides.
Peter, you'll remember how long we spent after Brexit arguing about whether those checks should happen and what might be the likely result if they did. I mean, it is politically toxic, isn't it?
It is a contentious issue. But, you know, at the time, there was broad agreement that it was a long-standing priority on both sides, a desire from both sides not to see a closed border. Probably we have, you know, a few thousand going in each direction. That's what the Irish government indicates, that they receive, you know, maybe a few thousand asylum claimants from Northern Ireland, probably similar numbers in the opposite direction. And that went on, and there was no particular flashpoint that brought attention to this. Well, that's changed, and it will be very interesting to see what the future of this border holds.
Do you think it's a watershed moment this week?
It certainly feels that way. But, you know, we have moments like this historically. What really matters then is the political appetite that must follow, and whether that kind of political conversation within and across governments is sustained. And that remains an open question, but I wouldn't be surprised if there is a renewed and honest appetite to actually institute border checks.
All right. And that's Dr. Peter Walsh from the Migration Observatory. Let's get political reaction to that now from Matthew O'Toole, MLA and SDLP leader of the opposition in Stormont. Good morning to you, Matthew.
Morning, Claire.
It's extraordinary that we're back having this conversation again, isn't it?
Well, with the greatest respect to Mr. Walsh, Dr. Walsh, we are not going to be instituting widespread border checks on the island of Ireland. That just is not going to happen. I don't think there is any appetite for that out with parts of the right-wing English commentary at and the ever rightward drifting English political scene, and parts of unionism who I think are recreationally talking about this but understand, I'm sure, in their heart of hearts that it wouldn't be, before you even get onto the political and practical and acceptability of it, it would be societally kind of impossible and logistically impossible.
Matthew, before you blame the right-wing media, yeah. I mean, think about that TikTok ad. I mean, those people smugglers made an ad in Dublin Airport guaranteeing you access to England, to the UK via Ireland. It is happening.
Claire, you're right that this is something that is in the ether and people are talking about it. But I think people should take a step back and think about the reaction that we need to have to all of this. So an horrific event happened in Belfast at the start of this week. I, as a representative, have been dealing with the aftermath of that, which has been effectively race riots and what were kind of attempted pogroms on the streets of Belfast. I had to move some of my constituents to safety just a couple of nights ago. So I have been dealing with the consequences of the reaction to all this. So I don't take any of this lightly. But it is also true to say that the existence of the common travel area is a public good and has been sacrosanct for people from all political sides for a very long time. It was something that was agreed pretty much unanimously would continue through the Brexit process. The debate was about how we move goods across the island of Ireland and between the islands of Britain and Ireland. So to talk now about simply instituting a whole series of border checks, fixed infrastructure, which sounds to be what we talked about before, I think isn't a runner. Now, we can get on to the conversation about better information sharing and better processes. I think that is a legitimate conversation to have, and I don't think that is something that anybody should dismiss, because there clearly is a jurisdiction. There are two jurisdictions on the island. Obviously, in the future, I would rather there's only one jurisdiction on the island of Ireland. And I would caution some unionist politicians who are talking about this to reflect on what happened the last time they flirted with the concept of hardening the border on the island of Ireland. The truth is that it just becomes, people kind of come to the conclusion that it's just practically and logistically easier to put the Czechs in the middle of the sea. No, I don't want that to happen either. I want us to retain the common travel area, but yes, protect people and ensure that we have functioning information sharing.
So if border checks are out of the question, how do you fix this? Because that arrangement to have returns on either side, it either hasn't worked or it has been ignored. Because as the London Times points out, there was one return to Ireland since 2020.
Can we say, first of all, I think it's important to say, Claire, in relation to this individual, she's obviously now been charged with attempted murder. He crossed the border, arrived in Dublin, from Paris to Dublin, flew north. But he did go through an asylum, the UK asylum system. He was granted leave to remain here.
Yes,
so, you know,
it's a separate issue. But I think indeed, what's happening more generally, it's on the agenda now.
It's on the agenda, but I mean, a couple of things. Number one, I am going to stand up repeatedly for a soft border on this island. And I think it's really important on a day like this that we remember how important that is and how much of the last decade we've spent talking about it. There are people listening to your programme who live living north of the border. There are people listening to your programme who are south of the border, but they've travelled for work or for life across the border. It is extremely important that we have functioning migration and asylum systems. That is really important. We have to recognise public concern and the extraordinary reaction to this appalling video and that depraved crime that happened earlier in the week. But it's also important to say the open border on this island is something that is societally, economically, culturally, hugely important. Like, we have to stand up for that and be clear about that, number one. Number two, are there ways to improve information sharing? Are there ways, are there schemes? I mean, the return scheme was talked about by your previous speaker, but what I'm not going to do is simply sell the pass on something that is critically important to how our island functions, simply because the politics in England has moved in a particular direction. Yes, I do want migration and asylum systems to work better. They have to work better. This would all have been easier if the UK had not left the EU and therefore left some of the structures of migration cooperation.
Well, we're 10 years on now. I mean, you know, what's done is done.
We are 10 years on, Claire. But that's the point. We had to work really hard to protect an open border on this island. So what I'm not going to do as a politician now, and Brexit, part of the reason I'm in politics, is simply sell the pass on the open border from the island of Ireland. We have to stand up for that. Yes, that we have to understand. And we also have to be clear about this awful individual who people rightly want to understand how he got here. Was he monitored? How was he monitored? How is this allowed to happen? Those are all important and legitimate questions to ask. But in doing so, we can't simply allow the conversation to be pushed towards jeopardising and undermining the border. And it's also worth saying people are checked, as people of colour know, when they travel south. There are spot checks on buses and trains. That's happened for a very long time, and they've had to deal with that. I don't want to see that be a huge encumbrance for people of colour. I think many of them have had that as an encumbrance and have been screened effectively at different times. But what it does give the lie to is the idea that there are no checks at all.
All right. Matthew, thank you very much for joining us this morning. That's Matthew O'Toole, who is an SDLP MLA. Your thoughts on that to our WhatsApp number, 087 1400 106.
The Claire Byrne Show.
With Aviva Insurance.
Weekday mornings at 9 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.